Welcome to the Sidelines. I am Matt Dolliff. I'm back with my sidekick extraordinaire, Ty Anderson, or maybe I'm his sidekick. We're co-hosts here. We're both kicking ass. We both love our jobs. We love covering sports, and sports are back, and we're all excited. Football's back. Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals. A lot of stuff going on, but our bodies are just not going to let us enjoy everything. Not going to let us enjoy life. Ty, I both had some issues over the weekend that we're still getting over. Ty had some intestinal discomfort, I believe, is how we described it. A little stomach thing. Are you over that, Ty?
Yeah, I'm over that. Now I'm dealing with my back basically feels like, I feel like Bane just snapped me over his knee, basically. And now I can't do anything. I'm in like the big well.
You think you live in the darkness? I was born in it.
You think you puked
over the toilet? Oh, so crack your spine.
I feel like I'm strung up on the rope right now, and I'm trying to fight my way out of the gigantic well, and I'm unsuccessful right now across the board.
You're just trying to prevent Bane from just casually reaching over and cracking your windpipe with two fingers.
Basically.
So the theory, the running theory, is that you puked so hard that you threw your back out. Is that what happened?
See, I thought that, and then no, this can't be that. Like this just can't be that. This is like intense back pain. Before I was feeling sick and gross and whatnot. I played hockey at 10 a.m. or whatever. Good game. Couple of assists. I don't really get points, so I got some points. And I felt fine. No collisions. No crazy idiot tough guys trying to hurt you for an rec league for fun.
Peter Chiarelli enjoyed your game. Well, you know, it's not all about points, you know.
Soft hands. Couple assists.
He's a 20 goal scorer.
Yeah, we only paid 8 first-round picks for him. I felt fine, but it is now what? It's Wednesday now? Today is
Wednesday, yes.
Today is Wednesday, and I can't move. I'm basically in my third day in a row now of just laying here and not being able to do anything besides lay around and ice and then put heat on my back and do a foam roller and everything in between. I bought like a massaging like pillow off Amazon. That's how desperate I've become here.
Pillow? How does that work?
I don't. It looks like a pillow. I don't know if it's technically a massaging pillow, but it looks like one.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, I'm gonna go to the doctor and ask that he kill me. So that'll be good.
That will solve your problem, I guess. I mean, your back won't hurt anymore. But yeah, I'm having back problems of my own. I'm old. I'm on the wrong side of 30, and I don't even know what caused it. That's like the terrifying part, is that I just wake up and my back hurts. And it's not the lower back. The lower back is usually the one that gets all the hype, but this is like upper middle, and like I rub my spine and it hurts to touch my spine, which can't be good. And my parents are saying, "Well, you gotta go to the doctor about that." It's like, well, what am I gonna get surgery? Like, what are they gonna tell me other than ice up? You know? And yeah. So yeah, I've done the same thing. I got one of these nice ice pads at CVS. It's nice and comfortable. I can lean back 20 minutes at a time. I got the heating pad too because I hear heat is good for your back. I'm taking ibuprofen like they're freaking Mike and Ike's. And I mean, I'm not in as much pain as when I'm not taking the medicine, but. This crap needs to go away. This is annoying. I was working out a lot and I was like, you know, losing weight and all that, but I think I'm just maintaining now because I can't work out because of my stupid back. And, you know, I guess it helps that I'm going to be able to sit on my ass on the weekend and watch sports.
Yeah.
Really annoying. It's not the kind of stuff we used to deal with in high school and college. That's you can put it that way.
No. And that's like the annoying part is like, it's like, all right, cool. Rest and recovery. I understand. How long before I can just, you know, live my life again?
Right.
So that part has been frustrating. Yeah. I mean, it's for me. I mean, I've had a laundry list of injuries and everything. I mean, I just, I, I just, I, I, now it's like it's crazy. It makes me like truly appreciate like pro athletes more, like what some of these guys play through. Yeah. When I'm over here, probably like I probably have like a, you know, like a simple back strain or like back spasms or something like that. But you know, these guys are out here playing with collapsed lungs and things like that. It's kind of unbelievable. It makes you realize how not tough you are compared to these pro athletes that we all criticize every day of our lives.
I know, seriously. That's the one thing, like, that's the one thing you really have no place talking about or criticizing as someone who didn't play, is that, like, because I generally don't like the arguments like, you didn't even play, because then someone will come along who actually played, like Scott Zolak, on deck, well, he wasn't that good of a player. It's like, it's okay, so only Michael Jordan can analyze basketball. Only Tom Brady can analyze football. Okay, I got it, guys. But yeah, like the physical toll that it takes on people is like complete respect for those guys. Like I would, if I were a pro athlete, I'd probably feel like I have to play through what I'm dealing with right now. But like my golfing buddies have been asking me for like 4 or 6 weeks in a row now. And I'm just like, no, questionable with a back injury. I don't know, doubtful. And then I'm ruled out by Saturday. And it's like,
unfit to play.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to go out there. I'm the first swing, I'm going to throw my back completely out all over again. It's, I have two back injuries at the same time. I got the one that's in the center of the spine, and then I have the one that's whatever, I forget what the name of the muscle, but it connects your shoulder blade to your spine. Mm-hmm. And I literally pulled that leaning over. I'm pretty sure I just bent over and pulled the muscle. So it's like, that's not a good sign. I need to maybe go to Alex Guerrero and see if he can work through that for me a little bit, you know.
Got to do it. The pliability exercises and
I just need to round up $13,000 and I'll be able to go to TB12 for some nice tissue easy. Work.
That's an extra day of work. Who cares?
Yeah, you know. Maybe I should talk to Stephon Gilmore because I said he should get a raise and then he got a raise the next day. So you should go to Stephon. Be like, Stephon, I just need like $90,000 and I'll never bother you again. I won't criticize you. Just make the deal. All right.
It's a good deal too. It's a great deal.
What a prediction. What a prediction by him on my part. Self-pat on the back, which I will not do because I will re-injure my back doing that. And,
that is a great call. That's one of those rare great calls where you said it to me and I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And then you're like, yeah, I'm going to write that. I'm like, in my head, I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, I wonder if it's going to happen now, but that's a good idea. Literally the next day that happened. That's kind of unbelievable that happened.
That was, yeah, it was magical. I should have played the lottery that night or picked up a scratch ticket or something just to see what happens. Yeah, I mean, I think they played the game well. Gilmore and his side. I mean, I know it angers people to say like he was faking an injury or something like that. I know when he missed camp earlier that he was tending to a personal matter. So, I mean, I don't want to question that. But, I mean, it's easy to connect the dots there. He's missing practice, and then all of a sudden he gets a raise. And, I mean, they're not in the business of just handing out raises. But Gilmore did deserve that. He got what he deserved. I think that's all that matters. And reigning defensive player of the year gets paid like it. And he didn't have his greatest game on Sunday. But, I mean, I thought that was a good start for the Patriots. It was what did I tell you is what I say to people who thought this team was going to suck and the offense was going to be a mess. They still have Bill Belichick. They have Bill Belichick and the staff, and so they're not going to beat themselves. They're not going to be all out of sorts. They're not going to commit stupid penalties. We didn't have any false starts or illegal motions or any of that crap. The offense, we'll see about the talent. The talent is the question with this team. I mean, what did you think? I don't know how you thought about the coaching versus the talent on the Patriots, but, I mean, encouraging debut.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely liked it. I think it – clearly, they're going to play, at least out of the gate, it seems, that brand of football that we kind of talked about, that we thought that we'd see from them, that sort of they're going to run it down your throat. The drives are going to physically punish you, I think, as the opposition. And they're going to rely on the red zone weapon that is Cam Newton. I mean, that is a totally new wrinkle in this offense that I think McDaniels and Belichick are going to have a lot of fun with.
Red zone offense has been terrible the previous 2 years, so I think that is going to be much improved.
Exactly. The only thing that concerns me, and it's not even really a concern per se, is the self-preservation of Cam Newton.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Running 15 times a game over 16 weeks. I don't love that idea.
not sustainable.
You can't do that, but I do think that ultimately you're going to see, you know, the wideouts incorporated more, the tight end incorporated more. I thought Izzo had that nice catch. I think it was in the second quarter, I believe.
It was early, yeah. That was a nice play.
And I was like, oh, if you can get more of that, that'd be a huge boost for this team. I'm curious what happens, though. It seems like Edelman got a little bit of a, you know, I don't want to say maintenance day. It's not the right way to phrase it, but a lighter workload than what we saw last year. That feels like it was by design as well.
Yeah.
But if that happens, you're going to need another one of these wide receivers to step up.
Yeah, I think they're not playing Edelman and run plays. And when they ran two wide receiver sets, Damir Bird was the go-to number two guy. And, I mean, I had Damir Bird in my downs for ups and downs from the game because he wasn't targeted. He was a complete non-factor in the passing game. So, yeah, I think the question moving forward is just the talent. I think there's going to be games where they come up short because they just don't have the horses. But I think as long as Bill Belichick is coaching this team, they're going to be in these games. The games with the big letdowns are going to be few and far between. And like he's gonna beat up on the bad teams and the stupid teams and the poorly coached teams, and the question is what happens when they come up against a comparable coach quarterback combination, which is what you're getting this weekend with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. I think it's gonna be a good game. It's gonna be hard fought, close, probably go down to the wire because that's what these games usually do between these two teams. So, yeah, what do you think? What are you smirking about over there?
Because I can't think of Pete Carroll now without thinking of, oh, no, when they throw the interception.
Yeah, oh, no!
I physically can't think of him without thinking of that. And have you ever seen the photo of
him? Cutting to him furiously chewing his gum.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the photo of him standing on top of the lockers in the locker room?
I think so, yeah.
But he's just a maniac. And I'm very excited to watch him for 3 hours on Sunday. That is going to be a tough game.
I really don't just quickly on Pete Carroll. I like look at him and how he behaves. It's like, how do your players listen to you? How do you have your guys go out and do what you tell them to do, acting like a lunatic all the time?
But I think that's his thing, right? Like he kind of like brings like a, I don't know if like, you know, a college atmosphere is the right way to say it, but he makes you. He makes you play for him. I think you run through a wall for the guy.
He puts his guys in position to succeed.
Yeah, and I do think that he has a good relationship. I know nothing about it, but it feels like he has a good relationship with his guys, with his top stars.
He's good at identifying talent and you know, building a relationship with them and putting in a position to succeed. So I guess that's why a lunatic like him just somehow finds a way to scheme it up.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing with Antonio Brown, right? Like Russell Wilson's working out with him in the offseason, and they ask Pete Carroll about it, and he says, yeah, we're monitoring the situation. He's not saying, you know, he's not pulling the Bruce Arians and going, no, we're not bringing him in. And you can understand why Bruce Arians feels that way, but he notices that his quarterback likes Antonio Brown and isn't going to dismiss the idea outright. You know, he's probably going to listen to what Russell Wilson says about it and make a decision from there. And so I think that's like a – you know, he's truly a player's coach. I mean, that's just one example of literally dozens. But just little things like that tell you that, you know, his team, his players, they feel valued, I would say.
Yeah, Tom Brady missed the coverage on that play. He was supposed to throw a shoulder to be able to feed him. Mark Evans went probably into Tom. We had a beer after the game. I told Tom over the beer. He was drinking wine coolers, and I told him he needed to read the coverage better and work on that in practice, so maybe show more the grit and determination there.
He got
called. What did you think of that game?
The Bucks game?
Yeah.
I think Brady looked like how he looked last year. I didn't magically think, oh my God, he's reversed the clock, and it was all the Patriots players' fault that he didn't look great last year.
I feel like that sort of he got it all out of the bucket on that first throw to Chris Godwin and was down, and then the run into the end zone. It was downhill from there.
Which you saw last year, though, you'd see moments of that last year, but I think that the pick six was the one that really surprised me. I was like, wow, I can't believe he made that mistake.
That was a poor throw. He did that in Super Bowl 53. I remember, if you remember, on that opening drive, it was an out route and he threw it high and inside and the guy picked it off. I mean, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think we're finally real. Like the guy is not going to be perfect. He's not going to be impeccable with his accuracy like he used to be. And the guy's 43. What do you expect? So, but the difference is that he doesn't have the safety net of Belichick having everybody on the same page and everybody knowing what they have to do. And he's like, oh wait, the receivers don't just know that. They don't know where to be. I thought, okay. All right.
Yeah, and then,
so like he's got the talent around him, but like, are they going to execute consistently like they did with Belichick? I think that's a fair question with Bruce Arians on top.
Yeah. And that's stupid mistakes, right? It's fumbling when you have no, you know, you can't afford that. I just think that he'll be better in week two because the Panthers stink. But
yeah, Saints have a really good defense, good secondary.
Exactly. So we'll see. Yeah, and Mike Evans was A, hobbled, and B, Lattimore owns him, like legit, like destroys him every time they go head to head. So maybe it shouldn't surprise you that much. But that's a difficult first matchup for him. He'll be better. But I do think that you're going to see games like this with him, and he's going to look like how he looked last year. So it really is on those receivers to be better weapons for him, to be better targets. Obviously, Godwin, you saw today, I think he's in the concussion protocol, so who knows who he plays. He looked like he had a good relationship with that sort of unknown wideout on their team, whose name is escaping me right now.
Scotty Miller.
Scotty Miller. I wanted to say Anthony Miller, but that's the guy in
that's the Bears receiver.
Yeah, this guy in Chicago. That was his best sort of connection, it seemed. I will say this. Holy shit, Rob Gronkowski looks cooked. He did not.
The guy didn't play for a year, and he's lighter than he used to be. He's not going to be the same guy.
He just looked like a non-factor. And maybe he turns it on with some more experience, but yeah, this is sort of what I think that, you know, is a legit point. Maybe he doesn't have it. I mean, after taking a year off and dropping football weight, you know, he said, oh, I can put it back on. Can you though? Like can you do that on an accelerated time frame and be an effective NFL tight end?
He used to be able to do that. Not now that he's over 30 years old and took a whole year off, you know, it's like, and he has to put the weight all back on. Like, it's just, he's just not going to look the same. And especially if he's trying to catch the ball, like he was noticeably slower in his final season. So, I mean, I think that just is what it is. And I think it shows the danger of falling too in love with these so-called dream teams before the season. Like, oh, they're stacked. Look at all these names. And they're all either old or not on the same page or getting hurt. And it's like, I'm not saying it's going to be a disaster. I'm just saying it's clearly they're not going to be like unstoppable, like people were sort of making them out to be going into the season. So it's going to be worth watching throughout the season, I think. I mean, for a while anyway, we'll see if the Bucs stay in it. I think the Patriots are going to stay in the hunt. And it's Bill 1, Tom nothing so far. And I can't believe people were counting out the Patriots as far as saying they're going to be a sub 500 team. And I mean, maybe I'll turn out to be wrong. Maybe I will get bled like Felger and Maz like to do with their listeners. But I just think with Belichick intact here, I think no matter who the talent is, he's going to have everybody more prepared than the other team for the most part. And until he faces a team like the Seahawks or the Ravens with John Harbaugh and Lamar Jackson, who looks like he's picking up where he left off last season. Like the games like that are going to be the ones that are going to be the toughest for the Patriots to win when they match up well in the coaching department. And so, but I like Brian Flores, and I think he's going to be a good coach, but he's not ready for that. He doesn't want that noise. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is not going to be consistent at any point. And I think eventually you're going to see Tua in Miami, but yeah, I just think the Patriots aren't going to beat themselves, and I think it's a good sign that Bill has them ready to go, and we'll see how they look in Seattle. But I think a big factor in that Seattle game is going to be that the stadium's going to be empty. There's not going to be any noise to deal with, and so I think it's just going to come down to execution. And so we'll see.
Yeah, no 12s allowed. That's the rule.
They're going to replace them with a 13.
Oh no, the 13 does not travel to Seattle in these times. I would
travel actually, ban on 13s.
While we're talking about the former Patriots and how they fared in their debuts and bringing it back to the Dolphins, did this game make you happy that the Patriots did not give Kyle Van Noy all that money?
Oh yeah, very, very happy. Did not need that.
And again, this goes back to what my biggest problem with him last year on the idea of paying him. was that I thought against the quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, Van Noy played his smallest. I didn't think that he was good in those games against those kind of quarterbacks.
No.
You know, the guys who can run RPOs and can run around and get you chasing them. I didn't think he played well against those quarterbacks, those dual threat quarterbacks.
Yeah, he did. You make him run side to side and cover. He's a liability. He's at his best when he's going straight up the field and getting pressure on the quarterback. That's basically what he is.
Yeah.
So and, like you get him out in space and you can beat him, and that's what you saw that especially with Houston. But
and Baltimore. I think the way the league is trending, I'm happy that you didn't give that guy a bunch of money. I'm okay with that. He's a great fill in here when they get him for nothing, turn him into something. But I'm happy that they made that call not to give him that money.
Yeah, I think defensively the Patriots made the right move, bringing in a guy like Adrian Phillips, moving Jo'Wan Williams to safety. Jo'Wan Williams played really well against a good tight end, Mike Gesicki on the Dolphins, who scored the game winner for the Dolphins in that game last year. And I thought Williams played really well. He had a third down pass breakup, and he covered well. And, I mean, we'll see how he does against even better tight ends. It's going to be a tough schedule in terms of tight ends. So, I mean, he's going to be a key player for them. And I think they made the right move switching more to like hybrid linebacker type of safeties rather than loading up on linebackers. I think Juwan Bentley looked pretty good as like sort of the middle linebacker quarterback of the defense, getting pressure and disrupting the run game and disrupting the point of attack. And I think they're going to be much better off playing 6-7 defensive backs at times, having those guys run around and having those guys have to cover the running backs and tight ends and coverage. I think that's going to make a difference for them. And the problem has been for the last couple of years covering running backs and tight ends. And I think they're all set covering receivers with their cornerbacks, but I think what they've done at safety and the turnover to linebackers is still going to be a concern. We'll see how it goes against better offenses, better quarterbacks. But I think what we saw on Sunday was a great start. And I think, good sign for them moving forward, especially with guys like Adrian Phillips and Jo'Wan Williams becoming a factor.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier this offseason, right? When Patrick Chung either was opting out or we weren't sure what his status was going to be with all the injuries he had last season. I think we talked about Phillips and how that might be a really good fit there as a replacement for him. And given what he did with the Chargers a couple of seasons ago, and then moving Williams there, yeah, it's kind of funny how they went from you know, Chung's gone, Daron Harmon gets traded, and you're like, what the hell is the safety situation going to look like? To now, it's, I think after week one, you got to feel pretty good about their depth there and their versatility there, and how they can match up with those different guys and throw different looks at teams. And we're not even talking about, you know, Kyle Duggar, you know, what he can do if he gets some more reps, some more familiarity with the team. So it's a very encouraging start, I think, across the board.
I think they have a real find with Phillips. Just talking to him the other day, like he's a veteran and he seems like he's a really smart player. And it seems like he really gets what's going on. And so Bill's going to put him in a position to succeed. He's going to know what the hell to do out there. And I think he's going to be really good. Hopefully he stays healthy. And he compared Kyle Duggar to Derwin James, who was an all pro as a rookie at safety. And we all saw the athletic ability and the speed with Duggar, but Phillips is talking about how smart he is and how he seems like a pro and not like a college player, you know, as I guess you tend to find with rookies. Bill Belichick's talking about how Duggar is an instinctive player. So I think he'll start to, the opportunities probably just aren't there for Duggar yet, but I think this Patriots secondary is just so freaking good and so deep. I think that's going to be huge for them going forward. It's going to be huge for them on Sunday because this game against the Seahawks is strength versus strength as far as their receivers and quarterback and passing game versus the Patriots' defensive backs. Mm-hmm. And the big question for the Patriots right now is, I like what the offense did on Sunday against the Dolphins, but what's going to happen when they have to play from behind? What's going to happen when they need a big play out of the passing game? And so we haven't seen that yet. And I mean, as long as they can run the ball like they did, teams let them run the ball like they did, then keep doing it and control the clock and, you know, control the pace and all that. But if they get down 7-0, 10-0, and all of a sudden Cam Newton has to start throwing all over the place, I loved that he was efficient and took care of the ball and like he placed the ball in good spots. He didn't throw any like danger, like almost intercepted type of throws. And I love the efficiency, and he could have been close to perfect if not for drops and things like that. But what's going to happen when it comes down to he needs to make a big play down the field with Julian Edelman, who looks like he's losing a step, or N'Keal Harry, who needs to play, he just needs to be stronger when he has the ball in his hands and he'll take better care of the ball. So, I mean, I don't know. Do you feel the same way I do? That's just like, I like it, but let's see what happens when the passing game needs to be ignited here.
Yeah, you're basically saying what happens when you got to win 35-31.
Yeah, I mean, not so much a shootout, but just like when you're in a situation where you have to throw the ball. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're just down 7 points, 10 points, and like you have to get back in the game through the air. You can't just run the ball a little bit, you know?
Yeah, that's when I hope or think that James White will be more of a factor in the passing game. Didn't feel like he had a ton of targets, done a ton of looks. Really? They didn't need to go to him. You know, they were leading and playing a downhill game. But I'm curious if that becomes, again, I think we talked about this before, is James White, if he can be McCaffrey light, you know, and catch passes out of the backfield and be that kind of weapon.
Compare him to Chris McCaffrey? You son of a bitch!
You know what's funny about that is that anytime you make a comparison like that, people actively choose to look at it from the complete illogical standpoint versus the point that you're actually making. They know the point you're making, but for them it's easier to go and poop their pants.
I'm gonna be irrationally angry, Ty. Deal with it, bitch.
Basically, but no, I think that's a weapon. I mean, it's gonna have to be what it was last year. If you don't get the tight ends factored in, so it's gonna be tougher matchup for White. But the passes you'd think should be there. So we'll see how that transpires. But yeah, you have a legit point there because Bird, again, plays the most snaps out of any Patriot wideout. Zero targets. I mean, you want to get involved a little bit here.
Need a little more out of your number three receiver spot, playing the most snaps at the position or whatever it was. He was their go-to number two receiver in the running game, which I get they're probably just like lightening Edelman's workload so he doesn't have to block on a million plays. But not zero targets. The guy, I think we're starting to see the, like, I remember during camp, everyone was talking about how good Damir Bird looks, but then I saw like Panthers guys, his former team, Panthers reporter saying, oh, I see New England is catching on to how good Damir Bird looks in August. And so I guess we're starting to see it's not going to come to fruition in September. He was fine as a blocker. I mean, he didn't have any like negative plays, so to speak, but it didn't seem like he was getting open in the passing game. He's a non-factor in that department. So, I mean, we're going to see more. We're going to need to see more out of him. I'd like to see Devin Asiasi get involved in the passing game. Maybe it's too early for him because he's a rookie. But it was encouraging that they put him out there as a blocker, and he looked like he belonged out there. He didn't make any glaring mistakes. So I think they'll probably install more into the passing game as the season goes along because, like, Cam has only been there a couple months, you know, like 10 weeks or whatever it's been. And I think they're sticking to what they know he can do well, and they know what they're ready to do. And the Dolphins weren't ready. So, I mean, it's like the coaching staff, they coached circles around Miami, I thought, in that game. And I don't know if we're going to see the same thing on Sunday, but I don't know. I think it's going to be a slow build like we usually see. And as long as Cam Newton stays healthy and he's not, and they don't have to run him 15 times a game, I think you'll see more out of the passing game. And I just like that they took care of the ball, but yeah, I don't know. It might get to the point where they need to get another receiver at the trade deadline, which I hope isn't the case. I hope they're not forcing the issue like they did last year.
Well, the good news, if they do need to do that, is that it seems like there's a few guys out there.
Yeah, Allen Robinson, he did the classic, the unfollow the team, delete the team. That's what you need. That's the sign.
Is that like, that's such like a petty thing, but it's also kind of amazing because like who are the people that are tracking, like,
right,
who Allen Robinson is following on social media?
This is the friggin' world we're in now.
Yeah,
that means something.
And Robinson is intriguing to me. The problem though is that he wants a big payday, and I can't foresee the Patriots picking him up and then immediately giving him a big payday without knowing a damn thing about him.
Right.
So that's an obvious issue. The other name that we're hearing or seeing in reports is OBJ. OBJ has worked out with Cam Newton. Seems like they're friends.
We hear it every year.
And but the thing now, I look at him and I say, not sure I want him now. I would have loved him 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Right now, I don't know. He didn't look particularly great against Baltimore on Sunday, and it's Baltimore, so maybe there's a little bit of, you know, of reasoning there. Also, his quarterback is terrible. Baker Mayfield is awful. I feel like such an idiot for buying in on this final half of his year 2 years ago.
Talk about a dream team that too many people bought into. Last year's Browns. Yeah. I brought into it.
God, yeah. And
I drafted him in fantasy. Never again.
Never again. He is in my never again territory as far as fantasy football goes for the rest of my life. Yeah. Baker Mayfield. Because I was watching Browns games last year because of him, which is a terrible thing to do, first of all, because that team is dreadful. But secondly, he's not that good. He's really not that good. So, but I think OBJ is at the point now where I don't think you want to, unless he gets cut and you can get him for a song, I really don't think that he's worth trading for at this point in his career.
Yeah, definitely not with the money he's making. Yeah, I just don't think Baker Mayfield has it in him to be like a respected leader throughout the locker room, that sort of thing. I think he seems like too much of a DB for that. I think we're seeing that Cam Newton isn't really that kind of guy. He is well-liked, and he gets his teammates to rally around him. And this is to my point before the season that I think is going to play out, is that the offense is going to be better than we saw the last couple of years just by way of being more functional. You know, we'll see if they had the horses talent-wise, which I'm not sure about. But it's just a more functional operation between the continuity returning on the offensive line. David Andrews back. The running game is back to where it was. The running backs are healthy. Cam Newton's on the same page with his receivers. He's on the same page with Bill Belichick. The quarterback and coach are on the same page. He's on the same page with Josh McDaniels. He's putting them all in positions to succeed. He's calling good plays. He has them all pulling in the same direction, which obviously was not the case in 2018 and 2019. And this is another thing where people get mad on the internet and go poopy in their diapers because you're implying that, you're saying Cam Newton's better than Tom Brady? Maybe now. But, like, just I think just this version of the offense is going to be a better operation overall than what we saw with Tom Brady, because he had one foot out the door and he knew it was over, and he wasn't in a good place with Bill. And now Cam is in a good place with Bill. He loves the team, loves the organization. We'll see what happens when they face some adversity, if they lose or if he has to come back, and we'll see what happens at that point. But right now, things are going well, and I think everybody is in the same boat, and the boat looks good. The boat's not rocking. The boat is smooth waters for the time being.
Yeah, and if we look at it from this point of view, is that as long as you're in the division with the New York Jets, and as we saw on Sunday, the Miami Dolphins, you have a chance. If you have a chance, things are going to go well for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
I still haven't seen that. I need to go and hop on the Game Pass and hit the Game Pass and watch the Bills-Jets game. And it looked like Josh Allen made some plays, and the Bills looked kind of good, but it might have been more about the Jets being absolutely terrible.
Josh Allen is the most fascinating quarterback in the NFL for me. He makes these amazing plays. And then he does these things where I go, what the hell are you doing, dude?
Great theater. Great theater, Josh Allen.
To the Jets at one point. He was running, and I was like, oh, it's a good run. It's a good run. All right. And then he just went, and shoveled it forward to the Jets. And I went, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What was the play there?
It's Brett Favre-esque. It's Brett Favre-esque. You know it's going to be something entertaining, whether it's an interception or a big throw or a big run. Very compelling stuff watching that guy play.
It's just unbelievable. Yeah, and so that's
way more fun to watch than a guy who's just terrible. You know, like, Josh Allen isn't terrible, but, like, he's just, you know.
Yeah. I know. I'm trying to think of, like, an objectively bad quarterback that I had to watch on Sunday, and I was like, ugh, enough. Actually, no, I would say having to watch Ryan Tannehill and the Titans on Monday night was very frustrating for me. See, that's when I knew, or that's when we should have known, that 2020 was going to be full of just complete fuckery was when Ryan Tannehill came to New England like 5 days into the year and just whooped the Patriots' ass. And now he's back to being a pumpkin. And yeah, I'm like, this is what, that's when I should have known that 2020 was going to be the worst year in the world.
I know. Yeah. And then he got his money. And now it's, as an AJ Brown fantasy owner, I'm not terribly excited about the prospects of Ryan Tannehill this season. It's not looking great.
I felt legit bad too. watching Steven Gostkowski kick field goals.
I don't know. I think it's over for him.
I think it's absolutely over. I mean, he makes the game winner, yeah, but it's from 24 yards out. I mean, he has to make that. If he doesn't, that's when the whole yips thing becomes real. But he goes 0 for his first four. One of them gets tipped, so you understand that. But just that was not a good effort for him. And I'm convinced – I texted this to you yesterday. I'm convinced that the Patriots were a little bit worried that Folk was going to get scooped off the practice squad by the Titans. And they were like, you know what? Promote him to 53. Let's go get this over with. Because Folk, he missed the 40, was it a 45 yarder?
It was bad. Yeah.
But he was 3 for 3 on extra points. So, you know, you'll take it and assume he can have improvements, that Folk can. But I think
the lack of a preseason does affect kickers. Yeah, maybe more than anybody, you know, like not getting those reps in, those real game reps. So maybe I'm just making excuses. We'll see. Folk was out of the league for a year, and he's been bouncing around so much. So, I mean, it would be surprising if he lasts all season and he's even, like, representative of what you want out of a kicker. I think ideally Rohrwasser eventually figures it out because he's the guy who can kick a long field goal for you. But we shall see. Good start for the Patriots.
I'm happy you brought that up real quick. Yeah. Nick Folk, I mean, his only misses with New England have come from the 40-yard line and out, which is a little bit concerning, you know, because you're going to need a 43, 48-yard, you know, make at some point.
Yeah.
He made one from beyond 50 last year, but he went, I think, 0 for 4 from, you know, from the 40s last year, and he's 0 for 1 from the 40s this year. So that you need the strong boot at some point, you know, you're going to have to get that because to what we talked about earlier, you're going to have games where the offense is a little bit stifled and you're going to have to settle for field goals. You need someone who can make it from 45 as difficult as that may be in today's game for some kickers, especially veteran journeymen. You need that make at some point. And can he be the guy, or is that where they go to Rohrwasser? And if he's ready, you know, we'll see.
I gave him the benefit of the doubt, saying, well, two of his three misses last year were in that horrible weather game with the Cowboys.
Yeah, the monsoon game.
There was none of that on Sunday against the Dolphins. So hopefully he cleans that up. Switching gears, that was a fun basketball game last night. What do you think?
This is brutal. This is absolutely brutal.
Is that a Vancouver Grizzlies hat you're wearing?
This is a Vancouver Grizzlies hat.
Not Memphis, folks. He's wearing the Vancouver Grizzlies.
Van City Grizz, baby.
At least it's a real animal that exists. Well, I mean, dinosaurs are real, but I mean, at least Vancouver repped an animal that exists in the day-to-day modern life rather than the stupid Raptors.
Yeah. And then I hate how the Grizzlies made the logo like a blue bear now. I'm like, what the hell is this?
It's blue. It's the bear necessities. We stink at basketball today.
Going to the Celtics. Holy hell. I mean, this team, they've had some trouble closing games out. And this extends beyond
you think?
This postseason run. they've had a few instances under Brad Stevens where they've just completely gagged the game away. And I think last night was truly one of the worst ones because in the fourth quarter, I mean, you're not even getting beat by Jimmy Butler. You're getting beat by Goran Dragic, and you left Jay Crowder wide open in overtime for three on some miscommunication defensively. I mean, if we were to do the Felger and Maz sort of the borrow a game from them, if you were drafting teams, you know, if you're drafting two teams based on these two teams, the Celtics have probably six out of the first seven players taken in this. If you were something drafting like these teams, so
I think Bam Adebayo is in the top seven.
Okay, yeah.
Jimmy Butler, you could argue, should be number one because he has the edge and experience over Jason Tatum.
That's what I would say. I would say he's either one or two, with Tatum being the one or the two.
No, sorry if that makes you angry.
But
go change your diaper. All right.
But there were two things that bothered me about last
night. Do you put that on Brad Stevens, though? Because you mentioned – because I saw – I mean, I just see the people – blaming him and saying he stinks and they're not going to win with him and all that stuff is whenever they lose. But I mean, I don't know. Isn't it on the players?
Well, I put it on him in the sense that when we watched Brad Stevens, the first 5 years or whatever, where he was the head coach of this team, he had a play for every situation, for every moment, and no matter the roster. I mean, he made Evan Turner a winner. He made Avery Bradley winners. You know, like he had a play for every shooter on that roster.
Daniel Tice now.
A less talented roster than what he has to work with right now.
Yeah, he's got Daniel Tice looking like a, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's always been great with having a play ready to go. Last night, those final two possessions, what the hell was that? Oh, my God. You had
at the end of the overtime, right? Not fourth quarter?
No. Fourth quarter. Leading into, you know, you have Kemba hold the ball for about 20 seconds, and then the shot clock's down to 4, and he's running into a sea of Miami Heat jerseys, you know, trying to out-muscle, you know, his way to the net, and it's not going to happen. So he gets nothing out of that. And then their final possession with a chance to win the game, tied at I believe it was 98. They just have Kemba hold the ball for 10 seconds, and then he dishes it off to Tatum. Tatum holds for 4 seconds and throws up a low percentage three, and we go off to overtime. Where was the creativity? Where was the Brad Stevens genius that we've seen so many times? I just couldn't believe that they went to this ISO sort of situation here and got bad looks out of it, and that was okay. That was acceptable. So that part was frustrating for me, not getting the ball in Marcus Smart's hand or Jaylen Brown's hand in the fourth quarter down the stretch late when Kemba is obviously struggling.
Yeah, he wasn't shooting the ball well, so why do you put the ball in his hands in the first place?
So those two things really frustrate me. Just again, going to ISO and then not getting his other teammates involved when they're having better nights was frustrating, because this is not Charlotte. Kemba doesn't need to do everything. He has teammates. He can. I understand shooting your way out of a slump, but
is that the time to do it?
Exactly. Do that in the third quarter if you can, please. Yeah. Don't do that with the final two possessions of the fourth quarter.
And just the very end of the game, though, I just think this speaks to my general point about the team, where they're at, and where Jason Tatum is at in his career. The guy's 21 years old. It's rare. I don't know if it's ever happened that a 21-year-old wins a championship as the number one guy, and he's the MVP. He's taking over the game. He's making the big shots. And I don't know. I that might be easy to say in hindsight after this particular game, because I don't know what you could ask more of him to do on that last bucket that Jimmy Butler made. He was in his face, and Butler went and made the play. So I mean, I'm not going to go around demanding that he blocks the shot in that instance. But then he goes the other way, and I mean, am I a piece of crap because I'm saying, why the hell are you going for a slam dunk? Like, why aren't you just trying to get the 2 points? Like, what, you don't need to put an exclamation point on it. And I just feel like that's sort of him trying to assert himself, which I like, but I just don't think he's at that point in his career yet. And it just happened. That's just how it goes. Michael Jordan wasn't winning championships at age 21. LeBron James dragged the Cavs to the finals, I think, at age 22 and got his ass swept by the San Antonio Spurs with Tim Duncan still in his prime. And look, it just doesn't happen. And I think the key is to, first of all, keep Jason Tatum here long-term, pay the man whatever the hell he wants, and just continue to let him develop. And I think this is good experience for him, but I just don't think he's that guy yet. I think he's going to come up short in these moments because he's so young and inexperienced. And I think Jimmy Butler might just be more ready to go to the finals than he is. And I don't think Butler has what it takes to lead the Heat all the way to the championship. They're not going to beat the Lakers. But I just think that's where Butler sort of has the advantage, because he has the veteran savvy under his belt. And I just don't think Tatum has taken that next step. I think he's an offensive juggernaut. But is he ready to do that in the biggest moments? I think that's a fair question to ask.
Yeah, and to the point of him attempting the dunk, he did have momentum. He did blow by his defender, the original one. And then he had Adebayo come out of nowhere basically stuff it down his throat. But I do think that it's rare. What you're talking about is rare.
I don't even know if there's a single example.
The most recent example, maybe the only example, is Kawhi. And Kawhi is one of the best players in the NBA. He did it in 2014 with the Spurs. And
right, he was the finals MVP that year, right?
And
he
was I think that was 25
or something, but still.
That was his third or fourth year. So it was around that time frame. But again, not a direct.
I think still older than 21, though.
Yeah, and he had a supporting cast. Yeah, exactly. So one of the greatest.
And Tony Parker and Manu, he had like one of the great veteran cores in NBA history. So
yeah, so that absolutely helped 100%. But I think that's the next example. So and it's kind of tough to look at Tatum and say, okay, be Kawhi Leonard. You know what I mean? Like that's a ridiculous thing. Very few people can be Kawhi Leonard. So.
And I think it's totally unfair to go the other way to say Tatum's a choke artist. Tatum is never gonna take the next step. He's never gonna be a big game player. Like I think that's too far. But I just don't know that he's ready to take that next step yet.
Yeah, no. It's too far to go either extreme, I think. It's too far to anoint him as
it's too much to ask people on Twitter to not do that, I know.
Oh, exactly. We put everything in the box for either the worst or the best.
Oh, there was shit everywhere last night.
But I do think that last night was confirmation that you are going to get a series here. You're going to get a good series. And I do think that you know, the Heat kind of remind me of the Celtics of a couple of years ago before they had all the star power, where they just grind you down. They have a hardworking team. You look at some of the guys they have coming off the bench. Tyler Hero, I wish he fell one more spot to the Celtics. At last year's draft, he was a guy that clearly they liked a lot, and you can see why. I mean, he's got ice water in his veins. He makes big shots. I like him a lot. And then you have Olynyk and you have Jay Crowder. We've seen a lot of those guys. We know what they can do. We know the style they can play when they get hot, the shots they can make. But last night I thought Jimmy Butler, you hold him to, I think, 21 points. But it's about stopping him late, which is no easy feat for a 22-year-old. Given the way that Butler just kind of has that swagger of an accomplished veteran who plays his best on this stage.
Yeah, it kind of alphaed the crap out of Tatum on those plays. So I hope Tatum can respond. I hope he responds well. If Tatum comes out and shoots poorly in the next game, that would be a bad sign. But yeah, it's gonna be a great series, and I had a couple friends ask me how bummed out they are, how worried they are. I'm like, guys, it's gonna go seven games. However the series goes, whether it's Celtics go down 2-0 and then win the next two, like however this is gonna be a seven game series. Nobody's gonna get dominated. Everything is gonna be close. It was a great game, and I don't know. I hope I'm wrong about Tatum. I mean, if Tatum wins them a championship this year, that's like the rarest of the rare. So that's just like you got to feel great about how he's progressing in his career and that he's already as dangerous as he is now. It's just, is he going to come up big in those big moments? And I think maybe he needs a few more years to really learn what it takes. And so we'll see. But there's a big opportunity in front of him to beat what I think is an inferior team talent wise. And we'll see how that goes. Ty is going to be our lead Celtics guy with the Celtics continuing through the playoffs and our stupid hockey team bowing out. And that's how that's going to go on 985thesportshub.com. One last topic before we get out of here today, this week, is I need to talk to you about the Dallas Stars.
Dallas.
In the Cup Final. Tyler Seguin made it back to the Cup Final before the Bruins, so take that for whatever you want. And the bigger story, I don't know if it's a bigger story, but Anton Khudobin is in the finals. And he came up big for the Stars in the series. You saw more of the series than I did. I know you're a big Anton Khudobin fan. And he's like – every goalie is a weirdo, but he's like a delightful weirdo.
Oh, he's
is that – is a delightful weirdo an accurate way of describing him? I need you to tell me your favorite Khudobin stories. There were a couple funny ones I remember you tweeted.
Yeah, Khudobin is—he's just a delight. I like, there's no other way to say it. He's just one of my absolute favorite players I've ever covered. He's great. One of my favorite stories, and I've tweeted this before, is we were talking one day, and he was talking about his role as the backup and how he loves it because he feels like an extra coach, and he's always trying to help players grow. And this is when Carlo was a rookie, and he was so proud of the way that he helped Brandon Carlo become a better defenseman. And then I asked Carlo about it. I was like, hey, so Anton said that he helped you out a lot this year, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. And he was, and Carlo goes, I never knew what he was saying. He goes, I never knew. And I thought that was so funny. Like, he's like, yeah, I helped him, baby. And Carlo's like, yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Carlo's a nice guy. So he's just like, forget it. He's on a roll. Yeah. I'm going to let him go. I'll let him feel happy.
The old TD Garden locker room was really cramped. The new one's not that much more spacious, but the old one was always really cramped. And Hudobin would walk through the locker room, and whenever he would try to get by a scrum, he would make noises like a siren on a fire truck, and go wee wee wee, goalie coming true. And it was my favorite thing that he would do.
Just like his go-to.
Yeah, go-to he did thing. It on more than one occasion. That's pretty good. But he's great, and I'm very happy for him. He's worked really hard throughout his entire career to get this opportunity. A late round draft pick with the Minnesota Wild. He's with the 2011 team as a black ace. He's with the team in 2013 as the backup. He gets waived on his second stint with the Bruins, works his way up back from the minors, plays better under Cassidy for whatever reason into Claude Julien, and he cashes in. And it's funny to me because the Bruins made the right call. On July 1st.
Yeah, I need you to get into this because now people are going to say, like, why didn't they keep him? Why did they sign Halak after what we saw in the playoffs?
And it just proves how ridiculously random and chaotic goaltending is, because on July 1st, 2018, the Bruins had the chance to give Hudobin the money that he wanted. He got 2 years, $5 million from the Dallas Stars. They had the chance to offer him that if they wanted to. They went with Halak for $2.75 million, a guy that Halak was always on their radar. They always liked his game. They go with him. That was the right call. Halak had starting experience, playoff experience, and had a better showing under higher volume with the Islanders. The Islanders, back then, they allowed a million shots a game. They went with the guy who made all the sense in the world, and yet here we are, where Halak got bounced in the second round in five games, and Hudobin is in the Stanley Cup final. It just proves that goaltending is the most chaotic position in sports, and nobody can quote-unquote win a cup until they actually win a Stanley Cup. The whole idea that you need to get a goaltender who can win it is ridiculous, because nobody can until they go and do it. And I just look at the last 5 years of cup winners now, or of cup-quality goaltenders. The Penguins were trying to trade Matt Murray. Braden Holtby had an .890 save percentage this year. Jordan Binnington looked like a minor league goalie this year for the Blues.
I'll never forget him for that game seven.
As one of the final two in hockey. And so I do think that it speaks to the idea that you need a balance. You know, is Hudobin this effective if he doesn't have Ben Bishop taking 40 starts from him in the regular season? Probably not. But I do think that it just, you know, it's even when you make the right call, you can be wrong. And that's where the Bruins are right now, where they made the right call, and yet it's still coming back to blow up in their face. And I will say this. You brought up Sagan. Sagan had one assist this entire series.
Yeah, he hasn't been good in the playoffs, this is like an annoying story. It's like, oh, yeah, Sagan's going to win a cup. He's going to stick it to the Bruins, but the guy isn't playing well.
No.
So he's like a passenger. So that's going to be they're going to debate it forever if the Dallas Stars win the Stanley Cup and Sagan gets his name on the cup before any of the other Bruins do. Because it's like, how much of a factor was he? Which is, it's really annoying to look at.
He has one assist in his last nine playoff games, in fact. He didn't have any points over the final four games of the series against the Avalanche. But this kind of comes back to where the Bruins have had some shortcomings. You look at the guys, like, so that whole first line has been kind of quiet. Ben, Sagan, Radulov, it's been kind of quiet.
And they broke him up.
Yeah, and they broke them up, but also what's happening with the Stars is that they're getting major contributions from these kids that you basically had never heard of before this moment. Kivi Ranta is one.
The guy that had the hat trick in Game 7. The good young defense, they have like Dennis Clint Mariano Berg and Miro Heiskanen, you know.
Yeah, and Heiskanen and Klingberg are are basically, I think, what in an ideal world, or what Carlo and McAvoy are. You know what I mean? Like, that's that sort of, maybe not as offensive minded as Klingberg and Heiskanen, but still, your pillars, you know, defensively. So yeah, Dallas. I mean, I think there are a lot of similarities to the Bruins in a sense, but the biggest difference for me is just the Kiviranta's, the Dennis Gurianov's, getting production from those guys. You know, that's equivalent of your Jake DeBrusk and your Anders Bjork.
Right. Yeah, I was gonna say you contrast them with the DeBrusks and the Bjorks of the world.
Yeah, and they're producing, and yours didn't, and that's why teams like that are still playing while you're at home.
It's a tough one. It's tough to watch, but it might all be moot because I think Tampa is still going to go win the Stanley Cup. But I know that they lost last night. It seemed like you were miserable watching that game. I didn't see any of it.
Oh my
God.
Was it
boring?
It just awful. There was no shots on goal happening at all. It was just the Islanders had, I think, 24 shots on goal before they finally won the game.
They're trying to win 0-0.
And it was just brutal, dude. It was absolutely brutal. And I don't know what it was. It was just, listen, Tampa has you've talked about the redwood trees on defense. It's hard to get shots through.
Couple sequoias.
But even at the other end, the Lightning really weren't creating a lot of high quality looks. It was a block party. It was just chaos. There was very little finishing going on, obviously, when you go to two overtimes to begin with. But not an entertaining game at all. And then it ends with, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk getting exposed. And I'll be real pissed if this is when they all get exposed. If this is when Bogosian and Shattenkirk get exposed as not being what they were, say, 5 years ago. If this happens now, I'm going to be very upset.
We shall see. It just shows how much of a difference that a good coach and a good GM can make, though. The Islanders are in the conference finals, you know, knocking on the door of the cup final just by installing Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello. Makes a big difference, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that's sort of the thing, right, is that you have to be able to – if you can't develop young players who are on cheap, affordable entry-level contracts, you need to be able to add veterans on cheap, affordable contracts you can plug into your bottom six or on your third pairing and have them excel. And that's something Tampa Bay has done really well. That's something that even Dallas, to a degree, has been able to do.
And the Bruins have been terrible at that. I feel like it's been hit and miss.
It has been. But the biggest problem for me, though, is that, you know, a lot of the guys the Bruins add to their bottom six or third pairing are sort of redundant, right? Like, do you need Nick Ritchie if Trent Frederick develops on a more consistent path? Mm. Do you need Andre Kasha if Anders Bjork can hit the friggin' net with a shot every once in a while? Probably not. You know, and that speaks to the whole timeline. You need a timeline to match up with your cup window. And the developmental timeline for teams like Tampa Bay and Dallas, and even the Islanders, if you want to include, you know, some of their guys, some of the guys that come to mind, Bavouille is one of them. You need that timeline to match up, right? And it hasn't matched up for the Bruins consistently enough for them where they're not hitting pay dirt like they should on that 2015 and 2016 first round. You know, between the, you know, they've made, I believe, they've made five picks in those two first rounds, 2015 and 2016, and it's yielded two NHL regulars. You got to hit more than 40% than that. Those guys should be producing full time now for you, and the three guys who haven't are Zboril, Senishin, and Frederick, and they could next year. But there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee on that, and that's where things get messy for you.
Hopefully, see more out of all of those guys that you just mentioned. Maybe as soon as next year. I hope we start to sort of see turning over to the new era. But you never know. We'll see what happens. Not going to be too much hockey coverage coming up. I mean, we'll see how the Stars do in the finals, because that's obviously worth talking about with those aforementioned ex-Bruins, Tyler Seguin and Anton Hudobin. And I will be watching the Cup Final closely. But for now, Ty's going to be focused on the Celtics hardcore. We're all going to be focused on the Patriots. And if you made it this far on the podcast, thanks. I love you. Please rate and review. Five stars only. Positive reviews only, please. That's all I ask. And shout out to Hardy Forrester and blanking on the other name of the guy that actually left us a review, but thank you. Oh, Joey Hurley is the name of the other guy that left us a review. Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. I feel like me personally, I'm hitting a groove here. I'm feeling good about my straightforward Patriots coverage. I'm trying to give you good insight into the football team, and then also I'm trying to balance that with the absolute goofiness that are the Felger and Maz parodies. Triumphant return after beating the Dolphins last week. It seemed like everybody enjoyed it, and I'm glad you got some laughs out of that. And we're kicking ass in the website, Ty. We're doing big numbers, and I'm very happy about that. Feeling good about our coverage, and hopefully the Celtics will start to win some games and keep and advance to the finals, because I'm not looking forward. We're staring down the barrel of having only one sport after having all four of them back, which was such a sugar rush. And now it's starting to sort of wane.
Yeah, I can feel that. I mean, it's so odd still for me covering these teams, these games. The energy, you know, is just not there. Like the Stanley Cup playoffs, I mean, it's nice. It's a nice little tournament, but it doesn't feel like the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, we've been making the best out of it. I feel just as a staff, as a people, you know, writers, fans, analysts, whatever the case may be, of just appreciating what we have right now, which has been great. This beats the alternative of no sports, but I do miss the fans. I do miss the crowds. I miss the energy of walking into a stadium before a big game. But listen, this is better than staring at the wall and playing another 10 hours of Tony Hawk when you can't when you can't get the damn sick score on the level, the Venice Beach level. It's very frustrating. Don't like it. Try my best. But yeah, no, I'm excited for what we're doing on the website and what we're all doing. We're going to be shifting. I mean, say we're, you know, I'm going to be shifting to a lot of Bruins offseason stuff soon. As well as the Celtics, just kind of recapping what lies ahead for this franchise, because a lot of tough decisions are coming. A lot of tough decisions are going to be coming on some key players for the Bruins.
Yep, we'll have to sink our teeth into that. As far as my commute to and from Foxborough goes, keep the fans at home all season, as far as I'm concerned. that was a pleasure. But yeah, it was weird being in the press box at Gillette Stadium, because we weren't hearing if they were piping any noise into the stadium, we couldn't hear it. And I rewatching the TV broadcast after, I noticed that they were adding in the fake crowd noise. There was none of that. And so, like, no matter what the play was, whether it was a big play, small play, touchdown, interception, complete silence after every play, which was just completely weird. We couldn't hear the players. I mean, it's borderline soundproof up there. So that was odd. And when there was an interception, all you get is just a couple people in the press box going, ooh, ooh. But then there's no hum of the crowd, no roar, and just the eerie silence before the team came out, before the game, was weird. But I'm not complaining. I'm just saying it's an odd experience, and it's obviously not the same without fans. And hopefully when all the next seasons come around, we just say, screw it, let's open things back up, because I think we gotta get back to it eventually. We can't sit at home forever.
I was going to ask you, before we go, I was going to ask you, is the Gillette press box still the quietest place in the world for some weird reason?
Oh yeah, it's like a library.
Yeah, very odd. You need fans there. I can't sit in complete silence and whisper like we're hiding. Yeah. You know, from the monsters from A Quiet Place. I can't do it.
Yeah, and like people have plexiglass in between the seats now, so now you have to lean around the glass to talk to someone. And I was trying to talk to Barth during the game, but I'm probably gonna tell him we gotta talk to Slack, because I can't hear, first of all, when someone's trying to whisper. I have bad – my sensory perception is poor when someone's whispering. And at the same time, I hate whispering too, so maybe we'll just have to keep it digital. But, yeah, no, it was a good game, and I will gladly keep going to the games, even with or without fans. And that was fun, and I'm probably going to stand up and be like, guys, can we get the occasional fart? Can we get the occasional even a fake fart with the armpit. Let's liven things up here. We need more noise in the press box. What do you guys think? And they'll be like, well, I don't know about that. But, yeah, I don't know.
You'll get whisked away. They'll just throw you out.
Yeah, they're like, sir, we'll have none of that. That can't be releasing toxic gas in the air at a time like this. But I am kidding. I will not be farting in the press box. All right. Any final thoughts, Doc?
No, I already got mine all on my system.
All right, get your back fixed. We're going to try to get our backs fixed. We'll update you on that next week. It's the Sports Up Sidelines podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.